Welcome to Bible Believers Fellowship, where we love you enough to tell you the truth. On this program, we will continue our expository study of the book of Exodus. We are now in chapter 23 and continue our look at God's legal guidelines regarding the application of the Ten Commandments and in the handling of issues that will come up during the normal course of events in Israel. We encourage you to have your King James Bible open to Exodus 23 so that you can follow along with us as we begin our study. Exodus chapter 23, we're reading what is basically the revised code to the Ten Commandments. I want to start in verse 1.
Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness.
Of course, we know not to lie. We know not to bear false witness. But remember that these are guidelines for managing society. And it's saying not to raise a false report. Now, I know this isn't directly talking about news media, because such a thing never existed in this day, and yet it did exist. What I mean is, they didn't have Newsweek and Time Magazine. They didn't have Fox News, because they didn't have TV, obviously. And they didn't have the kind of news that we have, no internet. But they did have people who stood at the gates of cities and reported. And they also then had people who served in courts, were served just like we serve, subpoenaed. And they have to go in, and it's not a choice. If you were an eyewitness to a murder and they know you were there and saw it, you're going to be expected to testify. Well, in any case, you shouldn't raise a false report. And in that sense, I think it does apply to our news media. Just take the situation in Israel right now, and you read and you see that these reporters are either liars or they are void of information, they are ignorant, and incapable of giving a good report. They say things like, Israel shouldn't be jeopardizing the lives of women and children by retaliating against Hamas. Where were all these people crying out against Hamas when Hamas is shooting rockets into Israel? Where were those people that, with the outcry against Hamas endangering Jewish children and elderly people? And what war was ever fought in human history where women and children don't suffer? But you know what? Those people in Gaza elected Hamas to power. I'm sorry, but the women and the children bear responsibility. Now you say the children don't. Well, that's the trouble with having the parents you're born with. But those parents, those women and the men elected in democratic elections, elected Hamas. So the people bear the responsibility for their own government. So my point is that you have to be careful when you're reading the newspapers and the media, because you're getting a false report when it comes to things like Israel. But you also bear responsibility. And just because you're ignorant of information, if you spout things that aren't true, you're going to be held accountable. Jesus said that we will be judged by the words that we speak, and we'll be condemned by our own words. And I think there's a lot of people who think they know, and they don't. There are a lot of teachers who think they know, but they're bearing a false report to the children in science classes. There are preachers who think they know things, and they're bearing a false report, false gospel, false witness against the Bible. And we have to be careful of that. It would be wrong for Tory to run out to the neighborhood for kids and to say something about Charlie that wasn't true. It'd be wrong even if she thought she was telling the truth. We have to take responsibility for our own words. And in court, in front of the judges, the same thing's true. We have to take responsibility for what we would say if we were in court and testifying. Just because you think you're telling the truth, there have been people give false testimony and put people in death row. So that's what he's warning against here. And look at the second half of verse 1. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. That speaks of purposely doing it. And that's what's going on in our world today. That's what's going on with this thing. I'll just use Israel again as an example. People are knowingly joining with the wicked, and they're an unrighteous witness. But this sort of thing happens in law, and we're going to see that God talks specifically about the poor. But keep in mind, this is like reading guidelines for law.
Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment.
This is talking about mob rule. This is talking about the majority, joining up with the majority just so you can be with the right crowd. You think it's the right crowd. What happened when they were crucifying Jesus Christ? It had to be some of the same people who had praised Him riding in on the foal of an ass on Palm Sunday, who then, a few days later, were screaming, "Crucify Him." And there's this addiction people have with wanting to be with the winner. And they see the tide going a certain way, and they jump ship, and they go with the winner. And that's what people, it's in their nature to do that. I think that's what swept Obama into office. And I think the media knows this. To go back to what we were talking about, the media in verse 1, the media knows that, and that's why they portrayed from the very start that he's the anointed, and the unstoppable and the unbeatable, and he's the chosen and all this. And there are people out there who are silly enough to believe it. That's why when we see people interviewed, they're saying, "Oh, after Obama's elected, I no longer have to worry about paying my mortgage payment or paying for gas prices, the high gas prices. He'll take it all away." Well, they're waking up to a cold reality, and some of them are probably thinking, well, once he's inaugurated, they'll wake up one day and see that's not the case. But you think about it, I think that's what's going on today in the church with the Bible translations. I think there are a lot of people who are intelligent enough to see that if things are different, they're not the same. And yet, they'll look you in the eye and say it doesn't matter, there's no real difference. Those are people who want to be with the majority. And they don't want to be against the majority. They don't want to be the odd man out. People want to be liked. They want to be a part of the crowd. And that's an addiction that you better get over if you're going to serve Jesus Christ, because you're not going to be a part of the majority serving the Lord, especially in the last days is where we live. You're going to be in the minority if you serve Jesus Christ. So you had better decide, I'm going to not care whether I'm with a majority. I'm not going to care whether everybody likes me. I'm going to do what's right. Otherwise, you'll find yourself disobeying verse 2, and you'll follow the multitude to do evil. It's the reason why the evolutionary thing has swept our schools and the teachers, and there are people who are teaching it, scared to death to ever speak up against it. We saw the documentary with Ben Stein, Expelled, and he shows these teachers who did have the guts to speak out against the indoctrination going on, and they were canned. They lost their jobs, and they were ostracized and made fun of and mocked. That's the price you're going to pay. And it's really something that if you go back and read the story of the lives of the founding fathers of this country who did stand against that King George, many of them lost everything and never recovered financially. Several of the signers of the Declaration of Independence died penniless. They didn't all enjoy the fruits of that revolution that we celebrate. And I think a lot of people really do just believe it was all roses. You know, the revolution, we beat the British, they went home, and everything's been great ever since. That's just not the way it was. There's a price to pay to stand against the majority. If you weren't with the majority against the Jews in Nazi Germany, you paid a high price. If you today stand up and say, I believe the Bible, I believe in creation, I believe in the literal interpretation of Scripture, even among Christians, you're mocked, scorned. So there's a price to pay. But God says, don't do it. Don't jump to the other side. Don't go over to the dark side. Read verse 3.
Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause.
Now this is a refutation of liberalism. Liberalism is basically the mode of operation for liberalism is to use the poor in order to push Marxism in and through our system of government and our economic system. When you hear them talk about all the socialistic policies that are being put in place by both George W. Bush and by the Obama people who are coming in, they will use the poor as their reason for doing so. You even hear people like Bill O'Reilly defending these bailouts and billions of dollars being thrown, taking tax money and infusing it, as they say, and taking over the banks and controlling the economy. It's all Marxism. And the excuse is always the same from O'Reilly and all these guys. But there are people hurting. Yes, there are. That's what's going to happen when you have a free economic system. But guess what? That will also happen if they succeed in pushing socialism on this country. Every nation that you go to where socialism reigns, people hurt. But they get there by using the poor to get there. And what this is saying is, directly in dealing with the poor, let's let the Bible comment. Turn over to Leviticus chapter 19, where we'll see what he repeats these instructions, but might clarify things a little more. Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 15.
You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor.
In other words, don't do wrong in order to do right. You see someone who's poor, and you may feel sorry for them, but you know what? If they broke the law, they broke the law. And you don't change the rules because it's a poor person you're dealing with. And that's what the liberals have constantly done. If you get a chance to see on C-SPAN, Illinois Governor Blagojevich, who's been impeached because he's a crook, he takes, and in response to that impeachment, what's he do? Does he get up and apologize, or does he defend himself? Neither. He brings out poor people and puts them on the stage and says the reason he's been impeached is because he's trying to help the poor, and this legislature in Illinois just doesn't like it. That's exactly what we're reading here. It is taking the poor and giving them basically a free ride. Who do you think set up the welfare program that allows people to get rewarded for having more babies out of wedlock? Liberals. And some rhino neocon Republicans. How were they able to do that? They made it look like since these people are poor, we should do the wrong thing because it helps them. And that's what God's warning against here. And it, whether it's a matter of how to deal with the poor or a matter of the poor committing crimes. A poor person having children out of wedlock, what should you do? You should make them face the consequences. Make them deal with responsibility. But no, that's not what's happened. In this country, they've said, oh, yes, she's had six kids by six different men, but she's poor. So let's pay for the children to eat. Let's give them free medical care, and let's put them through college. Let's let taxpayers pay the burden of her crime. And yes, it is a crime. When a person has children and can't take care of them and has children under those circumstances, that's a crime against society. But because our politicians don't read the Bible and don't follow the Bible, that's what they've done for years in this country. And it's hurt us. It's hurt all families. And the single motherhood thing has just become, it's like out of hand. And I don't see it ever coming back under control until the kingdom. Now let's go to verses 4 and 5. We've talked about this to some extent already. We're going to talk about oxes and asses. And I've always said, like I said before, think of Mustangs, the car, when you're reading this.
Thou meet thine enemy's ox or his ass going astray,
thou shalt surely bring it back to him again. If thou see the ass of him that hateth thee lying under his burden, and wouldest forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help with him.
Now, if you think in terms of cars, and let's say you got a neighbor here, and he's a total jerk, he's caused you trouble, and he's been a pain, and then you're driving down 23, and you look over, and you see he's got a flat tire, and you see he's having trouble changing the tire, and you've got a tool that you know would help him, then you should pull over and help him change the tire, even though he's a jerk. But you know what? Also, you have to step back and say, but there is an element here where God is saying, for the sake of the animal, you see this ox or ass going astray, for the sake of the animal, even though his owner is a jerk, get the animal and bring the animal back. So again, we see God putting in some rules and laws that affect your relationship with other people. You know, Jesus said, love your enemies. And that's not easy to do, but you should. Now, it doesn't mean you help your enemy in their attempts to attack you, and it doesn't mean you help them do evil, and you don't have to applaud them when they're doing evil or anything like that. But if you have an enemy and you find out he's dying of cancer, you should love him, pray for him, offer to help him, try to witness to him before it's too late, that sort of thing. Or if you find out that he lost his job, you can take over a sack of groceries and set them on the front porch or do something like that. And Paul said by doing so, you heap coals of fire on their head. And what that means is they burn with guilt and shame when they see you treating them that way. So really, what Moses is being told here in Exodus 23 is the same thing that Jesus would later say when he came as a man, the God of heaven incarnate, when he said, love your enemies. There's a lot more similarity between the Old Testament and the New Testament than people recognize. And it's because it's the same God. Same God is giving us what we have here, but it's a different situation and under different circumstances, a different context. So that's why you have to be careful in how you interpret it when you read it in Exodus or anywhere else in the Old Testament. Let's read verse 6 and 7.
Thou shalt not rest the judgment of thy poor in his cause. Keep thee far from a false matter, and the innocent and righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked.
So verse 6 is the opposite message of what we read up in verse 3. It's not a contradictory message. It's just the opposite circumstance. On the one hand, if a poor person does something, you don't excuse it. You still deal with it, and you don't allow them to get by with crime or irresponsibility. But on the other hand, don't rest the judgment of thy poor in his cause, meaning don't abuse the poor. If the poor does have an issue, the poor has been ripped off, if the poor have been hurt, then you should take care of business and see to it that the poor are treated correctly. There's balance. Again, we talked about that Sunday. There's too much imbalance in law and religion today. And we're called to be balanced, and we're given the guidelines for balance in what we read in the Scripture. In verse 7, the message is pretty simple. The innocent and the righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked. Of course, that would include little babies. If you are irresponsible and have sex, or if you're the victim of rape. Now, I certainly hope I never have to deal with my wife or children or my daughters being raped, and my heart goes out to anybody who's in that circumstance. But when that does take place, you don't respond to that crime against your wife or your daughter by then putting the burden of killing that child on your wife or your daughters. I know it's especially difficult if it's your wife and she's pregnant from rape, but you don't add murder, killing the child, on top of what's already happened. That just makes things worse. And that's a principle. If you take an elderly person who's suffering in a nursing home, but then you go and kill them, you haven't helped anything. Yet you say, well, I helped the old person, they're not suffering anymore. Who are you to say that they would not have been able to recover to at least some extent and enjoyed some more time with their family before they died? You see, you know, playing God is never a good idea. But abusing and slaying the innocent and the righteous is never a good idea. You focus on those last few words, for I will not justify the wicked, and that'll make you really pray for your country. The United States of America, our government especially, but even our people, are guilty of the blood of not only those abortions, not only the euthanasia that is now legal in several states, and those sorts of things, but there are people in this country abusing children, the child pornography thing, the sex slave trade thing that's going on. All of that is blood and crime that God says there's a payday coming. But our government has been involved in things that no one likes to talk about. But our government took hundreds of North Koreans out and shot them in the head during the North Korean conflict because they didn't want them helping out the North Korean communists. Unjustifiable homicide. Our government, for about 40 years, took black men in the Tuskegee experiments and injected them and gave them syphilis and watched them rot for years and suffer so that they could collect scientific information. Our government has some very, very wicked, wicked people in it, and has for decades. And that is why I say, pray that the judgment on this nation doesn't come until after the rapture. Pray that it happens after the rapture. Because there is a payday coming. Verse 8 and 9, Charlie, can you read those?
And thou shalt take no gift, for the gift blindeth the wise, and perverteth the words of the righteous. Also thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt.
Now, verse 8, the gift he's talking about there is a bribe. Basically saying not to take a bribe or put yourself in a situation where it's a conflict of interest. That's kind of become almost fanatical among state and federal employees, where you can't even hardly accept a cup of water without being scared to death you're going to go to jail or lose your job. And the pendulum's kind of swung to the radical extreme on that. But it's because there has been so much corruption. Again, the Blagojevich thing in Illinois. Senator Obama becomes president-elect, and Blagojevich says, I've got this Senate seat now, and it's golden, and I'm going to get something for it. And he used a lot of colorful profanity in his description of what he wanted to do with that Senate seat. Well, that's exactly what this is describing. That's why Blagojevich is in the hot water he's in. Bill Clinton, people like to say he was a bad president because of Monica and all that. Bill Clinton was a bad president because he sold state secrets to China. He took the gift. And when you see these guys in politics who are dirty, usually if it involves a woman or money or drugs, that's the front. You get deep into what's going on, you find out that they've been selling themselves out for much bigger things behind the scenes. And that's what you find in almost all these guys. Well, it blinds the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. I just think of our Constitution. Our Constitution does not say anything about separation of church and state, doesn't use the word endorse, but yet these judges were paid off by liberal groups, and they perverted the words of the righteous. And I mean the words of the Constitution that were laid down by men of prayer who sought to have a just law for this country. The Second Amendment says you have a right to bear arms, And it does not say anything about Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines. And it doesn't say anything about hunting. And yet these paid off liberals took the gift and have perverted the words of the righteous. Now go to the seminaries. And you see the professors. They are paid off. They make big bucks to sit up in those ivory towers and to write these books perverting God's words in order to justify the wickedness of the people who pay their paychecks. You follow the money trail, and you'll find that these people who are corrupting the Constitution and corrupting the Bible and destroying this country, they have taken the gift. And they pervert the words. I think there's a prophetic statement there. You look at the nation of Israel. What did they do? They go into Babylonian captivity, and these men take these big positions paid off by the Babylonian government, and they then become the big guys among the Jews, and they come up with this thing called the Talmud that completely perverts God's word, the words of the righteous. And then by the time Jesus comes, they're blinded by the Talmud and can't even recognize their own Messiah. And those seminary professors I just mentioned, their books have blinded everybody to the rapture and to the coming judgment of the tribulation period and the return of Jesus Christ bodily to set up His kingdom. They've perverted the words of the righteous. And it set the church up to be the Antichrist, false church when He comes. And then in verse 9, as Charlie read, not to oppress a stranger. And he's telling them, we've discussed this a few weeks ago, he's telling them to remember they were once a stranger. Don't forget where you came from. And that's a message for us. Don't forget where you came from. I don't care if you were saved when you were 5. You were saved when you were 10, 12, whatever age. You were a sinner, lost. You were a child of wrath and wickedness, totally depraved, on your way to an eternal hell with real flames of fire and torment where you would have remained in an everlasting lake of fire for eternity. If you've never given that much thought, you ought to. Because that's where you were headed. But because you heard the gospel and believed, God saved you. And so you don't have to worry about going to hell anymore. But don't forget. Don't forget where you came from. We should always remember that because it helps us have a heart for the stranger. Meaning the person who doesn't know the Lord, the person who's lost. And we should have a heart, in practical matters and in everyday life, have a heart for those around you who are strangers and the hurting and all that. But on a spiritual level, remembering where you came from, the fact you deserve hell. And without Jesus Christ, that's where you're going. Don't forget that. And that gives you a heart for sinners. We trust you've learned a great deal from this message. If you will visit our website at kjvbiblebelievers.com, you can download all of our messages in MP3 format. You can watch hours of free video. You can find dozens of articles, all for your use, at absolutely no charge. Again, that's kjvbiblebelievers.com. This program was brought to you by Bible Believers Fellowship, P.O. Box 662, Worthington, Ohio 43085. Thank you for listening.